Ladies and gentlemen, it is a pleasure to welcome back to the Saleri Report one of my favorite people in the world of finance and accounting. I want to give you a full introduction, but I also want to tell you first and foremost, it's really hard to find very smart, very honest money people that you can trust. And I'm about to bring back one of them. Bill Bergman is the research director and a leading light at Truth in Accounting, which is a very important organization. If you haven't discovered it, I hope you do from this presentation. He also teaches at Loyola University in Chicago. He had a distinguished career, as did my mother, at the Federal Reserve. And was unfortunately too good at his job and stepped in a very similar kind                └================== situation as I did. You know, he was bringing transparency where it wasn װ================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================================ great organization, American Institute for Economic Research. And then another organization whose services I have used for many years, Morningstar. And so he has a really strong background in sort of the academic side and the public side and the private side. You know, so this is a pretty well-rounded background. So Bill Bergman, thank you for joining us on the Solari Report, and congratulations on your new report on state governments. It's really, I will describe it this way, it's delicious.
Well, maybe I won't eat it after our conversation, but we'll thank you very much for the thoughts, Catherine. It's great to be with you again. I still remember our first conversation back in 2004 or so. time is flying as we speak, but time is money, and we all got to try to catch up. So,
so as I remember, when you were leaving the Fed and you wanted to know what you should do, where you should go, I said, just dive back right in, right? Isn't that what I kind of said?
Well, I guess more or less did. In choosing to go somewhere, I actually went to the American Institute for Economic Research. That was my first job after leaving the Fed for about a year after their summer fellowship program. A unique place, started in the early 1930s by E.C. Harwood on the heels of the government's activities, among other places, in the gold markets. And it was really a special place, one of the greatest libraries I've ever seen for, if you care about money and banking and old material. They have all these wonderful old books and reports that were in hard copy, and it was just a fabulous place with some very
well. I've had the previous president on, and I often recommend their books.
Yeah, they've got a good set of books for people for that care about their, you know, not just their own finances, but the financial trends in the country as a whole.
Okay, well, let's dive in. Tell us about your new report. It's one I want everyone in the United States to know about and to access.
Thanks, Catherine, I guess. Yeah, that's our flagship report annually, the first report that got Sheila Weinberg going on starting Truth in Accounting. Sheila started Truth in Accounting back in 2002. She was concerned and initially exercised more or less on the federal government's financial reporting and the condition of the federal government. But then people in her neck of the woods started tugging on her elbow and said, you should probably take a look at the state of Illinois. And one thing led to another after that initial impetus. And Sheila and her colleague Sean Cruz did some heroic work after not just Illinois, but getting all 50 state balance sheets, and I'm talking about the state government's balance sheets, on a framework she thought was far superior than what the Governmental Accounting Standards Board was requiring. The balance sheets, you know, we've learned in financial markets in the private sector the dangers of off-balance sheet debt accumulation. Well, that was happening in spades in state and local governments throughout the country. The pension debt was effectively off the balance sheet, along with another big number, and that's the retiree health care benefits that were promised to the...
Which is my recollection, just looking at the Pew studies, is that's the worst.
The health care is by far and away the worst. At least in the current data, it's not as big as pension, but it's also more uncertain, and maybe in that sense, it's the assumptions that go into the present values for those liabilities are even more uncertain than the pension land. And it's a big number. That's the main,
right.
And it's going to, resolving this is going to be difficult. But some states are better than others. Well, you know, and that's what we learned in our financial state of the states review, among other things. We can, you know, we've got 50 states on a consistent framework across the states, and you can learn lessons from the good states and not just call out the bad ones. In our latest review, at least for 2019, that's the latest fiscal year we have available. That's another thing we can talk about. But overall, we saw some modest improvement from the year before. Trouble is, that was in a fiscal year that started at least 6 months before the latest pandemic lockdown crisis. So all we have is a picture of, you know, the latest that we have available. And so the modest improvement last year has been erased, and we're going to see how big, and some, it's going to take time to learn about that. But thinking about those overall results, at least looking at on average across the 50 states, one thing that's kind of disheartening or even scary is that there's really been little improvement over the last decade on average, despite the fact that the 2009 data, which we have, that's the first data that we have, that was in the middle of the worst financial and economic crisis since the Great Depression.
Right. And so if you've had this much of sort of an uptrend, you know, some people would call it a bubble, and you haven't taken advantage of that to put your house in order, you know, what are things going to like look like when it's really, when we're in recession or worse?
Yes, we should have been improving, and we weren't, and on average across the states, and some of them, including my home state, were actually deteriorating in that time frame, despite the favorable economic and financial environment. And you called it possibly a bubble. I'm afraid that, you know, that could be what the Fed did after the financial crisis. That's a little scary.
So one of the reasons I so value this report and what you do and wanted you to come on is I keep trying to stress to all of our subscribers, you must do due diligence on the places you choose to live, because you are subject to risk in services or in taxes or in other ways, directly and indirectly, if your state is not financially sound. When you introduced, or sort of early in your report, you defined top five sunshine states and top five sinkhole states. So the best five and the worst five. And I think there's some real lessons to be learned by looking at those. So why don't you introduce your top five sunshine states and your top five sinkhole states?
Well, the sunshine states, you know, the ones to learn from as a general rule, the idea, they aren't just lucky, that, you know, most of them anyway, but we'll talk about some of them. The sunshine states include the likes of Alaska and Wyoming, which have had a tailwind from energy markets over the last few decades. But we learned a lesson in 2015 that oil prices don't always climb to heaven, and the energy intensive states are likely to face growing challenges, including Texas and Louisiana in the years ahead. But among our sunshine states, the ones to learn from, and I like to define it more broadly, not just the ones that have been lucky from the oil markets developments, the longer term ones anyway, states like Utah, Idaho, Iowa, Nebraska, and Tennessee are states that are not just lucky, they consistently do a good job of keeping their accrual revenues, not their cash-based accounting, but the accrual revenues ahead of total accrual expenses. They truly balance their budgets. That's the discipline that leads to a healthy and sustainable governmental posture, as opposed to the states that don't.
You know, I just have to stop you for a second and brag on Tennessee. Because, of course, I live in Tennessee. I've lived in Tennessee since 2000. And I know how hard they work at this. And I know how hard it is. You know, because they are not a wealthy state. So they're not rolling in oil revenues or anything else. But I know, if you look at the discipline, both at the county and the state level, it's unbelievable. And it's such a, you know, I moved there from New York and Washington. And the seeing a state which is that strict and conservative, You know, a lot of people used to think we were fuddy-duddies.
Nope.
It's kind of like the revenge of the Methodists. It's deeply conservative, but it has really stood the test of time, is the only thing I can say.
Yeah, it's hard to resist the temptations. What we're talking about are entities. They're governments, and they have something that's special compared to a local drugstore or a local sporting goods store. They have the power to tax. And that power to
Right.
tax is a tempting thing. You feel like you're in charge of your revenues, and it's hard to resist the temptation to spend beyond that power. But the states that do are the ones that are actually doing a good job, a responsible stewardship for
Right.
their citizens. Having said that, Tennessee is not universally in good shape. There's a whole
Right. They're a B. That you didn't give them an A. They got a B.
yes,
Right.
but they're up there. But Nashville is not. And that's the story lately. Nashville has kind of been the problem
Sinkhole.
child within
Yeah.
Tennessee. That
Well, I just saw an email that said Nashville was going to raise property taxes 34%. That came in about 2 months ago. I don't know if it's true or not, but I went, whoa. But
Nashville's
Nashville's
had a
been.
wake-up call. They were subject to the same types of political and special interest group pressures, I'm afraid, that infected other states that are in bad shape underneath the surface. And Nashville, the state, has done a responsible job of exerting greater authority over Nashville's finances in the last few years.
So one of the things I really noted when I was looking at your five sunshine states, I did a study many years ago of the sovereign wealth funds,
Okay.
and Alaska is the only state in the union really that has done the equivalent of a sovereign wealth fund. Most sovereign wealth funds are when commodity producers, they have boom bust commodity cycles. And so what they do is they build up the wealth fund in the boom cycle so that they can manage through the bust cycles. I'm not, I don't know as much about North Dakota because I looked at Alaska in connection with the sovereign wealth funds. But if you then look at Texas and Louisiana, you look at them and you say, Norway could do it. What's your excuse?
Texas gets more of a reputation, I'm afraid, than it deserves on this score, both directly from you building a sovereign wealth fund versus indirectly from the tailwind from energy prices that Texas had for a long time. Texas should be in much better shape than it is compared to the likes of Wyoming, North Dakota, South Dakota, and it's not. And that's a sign too that I'm afraid we're going to have some more exciting stories out of Texas in
Well, I would
coming
tell you
years.
North Dakota's secret is twofold, in addition to the oil, of course. One is they have a state bank, and two, their legislature is part-time, not full-time, and they only meet once every other year.
Hopefully, maybe I hope they don't have too much to manage. Maybe that anyway. And I'm still sometimes the state bank idea is very interesting. We can talk about that at some length. I consider the hands of a state bank in the hands of, say, Illinois or the city of Chicago. That's a
Frightening. That's a
frightening
frightening
prospect.
thought.
I don't know if that's a solution for us in Illinois.
So I knew a lot about New Jersey. When I was turning to the sinkhole states, I was the underwriter
Okay.
for the New Jersey Turnpike, for the Garden State Parkway, and then junior manager on the New Jersey Turnpike. So, to me, it's all soprano country, and I know a lot about it. But it just goes to show you, corruption does not make for a well-managed state.
As a general rule, both illegal and legal, corruption is worth attention. The ways in which special interest groups can manipulate legally public policy for their selfish interest at the expense of the general citizen, that's the driving force behind the tendency to overspend and not save for the future. If
Right.
if the average Joe and Jane are the ones paying the price down the road, that's the thing we need to guard. That's why we need to do our due diligence, like you said, for our understanding our local places.
So I look at New Jersey and all the wealth and the rich land and the ports and the resources. And I look at Illinois and Connecticut and I just shake my head. I haven't been looking deeply into municipal credits for many years, but whenever I look at them, I just shake my head. How could it have gotten that bad?
Well, the dollar amounts are staggering. For instance, the city of Chicago, the state of Illinois, New York City is another dramatically. And I'm afraid part of the reason they got so bad is because they benefited in the short run from false advertising in the accounting statements they did provide and the communications that they did provide. The Governmental Accounting Standards Board has fixed those to some degree in recent years with the recognition of OPEB and pension. But what their current position is the product of decades of mismanagement and effectively spending beyond their means, which was enabled in part the bondholders. I mean, we can talk about, you asked about bankruptcy. What does that look like? I'm afraid bondholders helped enable the kick the can down the road environment within which New Jersey, Illinois, Chicago were able to feed the beast as long as they did. We're talking now about maybe the accounting for budgets as opposed to the financial reporting, but the budget accounting, and that's something that's going to be a hot issue in the next year or two with GASB's financial reporting model project, a longer story, but the budget accounting has long relied on more or less deceptive cash-based accounting principles for the funds accounts that are provided by governments. I still remember asking, the Chicago claims to balance its budget according to state law every year. And if they do, how did it get in such a bad, such a deep hole? I asked the question of one of our the former finance committee city council chair, Ed Burke, who is now, he's been under scrutiny for a corruption investigation. I asked one of his colleagues, how do you claim to balance the budget when your accrual revenue is lower than your accrual expenses every year? And he was almost proud in his response. He said, well, we have access to the capital markets. We borrow the money. And in fact, they think about borrowing proceeds as a form of revenue.
Jesus Christ.
And that's the environment within which you build up your balance sheet and you grow in the short run with long-term consequences. They tell us they balance the budget, but they're running up the credit card in order to quote, it's almost like an oxymoron. That's why we believe the budget accounting and the funds accounting at the Governmental Accounting Standards Board need to be revised and changed.
Right, but at the same time, you know, one of the things we've seen is a real breakdown in the rating process and in the accountability of creditors. You know, the creditors, especially I think the mutual fund system has just decided, okay, we've got to pull money, you know, we've got to put money out and we're not going to worry about what could happen 5 years from now. You know, it's not a next year problem. And so there's a kicking the can by both the rating agencies and the bond market, which is very scary. And I know, you know, for 10 years I worked as an individual investment advisor, and I would look at some of their holdings, and I would think, you know, why in the world do you own this? And what I realized is, you know, if you looked at the ratings, it looked okay if you didn't know any better. So I just think it's... I think the system has been very kick the can-ish, you know, across the board. And to me, the rating agencies, I don't know what they're doing. I mean, if I was really struck on page 19 of your report, you point out that California has yet, as of the end of August, to produce financial statements for 2019. Well, why would anybody let them go into the bond market under such a... That's shocking to me.
If you're in the private sector and you don't produce financial statements, what happens to you?
You get delisted. You can't
toast.
Go into the market.
Your CEO is out of there. It's you know. But no, that's not the case. Governments are above that, at least in the short run. We'll see if that we could the maelstrom may be there down the road for a few of these folks.
Right.
You know, the rating agencies, the bonds, I'm afraid, you know, one of the costs, you know, there's a debate about how much the cost of resolving the 2008-2009 crisis was for the taxpayer. And right. Some people say, oh, they paid back the loans. It's okay. I'm afraid one of the understated and possibly overwhelming costs that's not in that accounting is the fact that the world saw the bailouts and said, hey, they can do that again. And we didn't see
right.
the moral hazard of the resolution. And we see that today, you know, the special interest groups attached to governments, not just bondholders, but they have an unholy alliance, I'm afraid, with organized labor and other
right.
special interest groups that are
attached
to the governments that,
right.
you know, they point to the bailouts in 2008, 2009. Hey, you're just bailing out Wall Street. Why can't you just bail out us? And that's
right.
why we let ourselves get into this hole and turn, you know,
so
they're looking for a bailout today.
So there are two other things that are going on here that I wanted to get your thoughts on. One is currency debasement, because the feds can literally print money
mm-hmm.
and the states can't. And so, you know, the states literally, if the states could float their own currency, they'd be in much better shape if it was properly managed. Big if. But with the feds basically constantly debasing the currency and the states keeping a lot of their balances in dollars, they and their citizens are getting drained.
Well, let's look at first at the federal government and its confidence in its ability to print money. The federal government's balance sheet, Catherine, has roughly $4 trillion in assets, $24 trillion in liabilities. And those are understated in our view. 4 minus 24 gives you a big hole. But
right.
the language introducing the balance sheet includes the following two, quote, comforting, unquote, sentences. There are, however, other significant resources available to the government beyond the assets presented in these balance sheets. They include the government's, possessive S, sovereign powers to tax and to set monetary policy. In other words, we should feel okay about our government. It's going to be okay because it can A, take our money away, and B, inflate the value of the dollar away. And this is in a...
Well, it can also seize our property. When I was when I was on the board of the Gold Antitrust Action Group, they wrote a letter to the Treasury saying, do you reserve the right to confiscate gold? And the Treasury wrote back a letter and said, no, we reserve the right to confiscate everything.
Oh my gosh, that's so, well, the lesson of 1933, which you're very, very aware of, is that gold seizure possibility. I'm just thinking out loud here, but what if we have a world that where Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies become more widely accepted? Is it possible the government asserts this power to seize valuable things for things beside?
Well, my concern, you know, when they seized gold or they confiscated gold at that point, and I would point out they sort of only got what you had at the bank. But when they did it, it was a big portion of personal savings. Now it's IRAs and 401ks.
Mm.
And that's where I get nervous is, and I don't think they have to just seize it. They can play all sorts of games, like all of a sudden you have to buy treasuries, or whoops, now it's an annuity. So.
And now we get into an arena that's a fascinating one. Speaking of watching your and being due diligence on your government, you've got to watch the constitutional law issues for the relative authority of the executive branch versus the Congress.
Right.
You know, when they do this kind of stuff, it tends to be exercised through the executive branch under national emergency authorities, and whether or not we have an active and willing judiciary and or Congress to stand up to those extraordinary situations. That's crisis management for citizens 101.
So let me bring up another subject, because I think one of the reasons the states are struggling is because the feds, one, they're constantly putting out grants and infrastructure money and other kind of money that, you know, it looks like it's budget positive until you have to maintain the stuff and it goes budget negative. So I think we're seeing a lot of projects done that are fees for our friends that aren't justified by the private economy. Chuck Marone at Strong Towns, I know you know this, has done a lot of work to show that dynamic. And it's exactly what I ran into when I worked in the government, is what I call negative return on investment money. Mm-hmm. And it came with massive amounts of rules. I just had a bit of a squabble in my town. I'm trying to stop them putting in a walking path. And, you know, there's nobody who's going to use it. There are three people who walk. One is me and one of my colleagues, and we're happy to walk on the road. We don't want a walking path. So pouring concrete all over the lovely town commons. And this is a town that's worked for decades to save reserves. You know, so they're very well managed. We're going to just spend an unbelievable amount of reserves doing the match for this walking path. I think we could do it cheaper if we just paid 100% and did it ourselves. But it came, Bill, with 5 pages of rules and regulations of the different laws that you had to apply. And I basically, you know, if I had taken my attorneys and tried to figure out what it really meant, you know, it would have cost me $100,000 to figure out what we were liable for. All I know is, you know, by the time somebody came in and decided they wanted to audit, investigate us, they had us over a barrel. But if you look at, you know, at least what we knew we were supposed to do, it was very, very expensive. You know, so that was going to be the world's most expensive walking path. It's the gift that keeps on giving.
It's a gift for somebody. Somebody wants it, and somebody's getting paid. That's part of the program. And in turn, the complicated laws are feasts for lawyers that have to administer the system.
Right.
And they're part of the – when we look across the 50 states, for instance, there's a really remarkable correlation if you look at – the condition of state and local governments, their finances, and the actual number of lawyers per capita in that area.
Right.
You see a pretty distinct, you know, lawyer intensive places tend to be in worse shape.
Right. Well, one of the things I do believe, if you look at the employment statistics, one of the things that has happened, while corporations have been re-engineering and cutting out labor, cutting out labor, cutting out labor, cutting, you know, and really downsizing, if anything, government employment has trended up slightly. So we've never seen the same kind of re-engineering on the government side, and my fear is that's coming.
Government not only has not, you know, I'm afraid it's how you define the public sector and public sector employment, the formal government statistics that were given that distinguish between government employees and private sector employees. There's a lot of people in the quote private sector that are effectively working on government contracts or a government dime effectively. And the government is bigger than we think, I'm afraid.
Well, when I first got to HUD in my area, I looked for all the big programs I was doing, FHA mortgage insurance and Section 8 subsidy. When we started those programs, 70 cents on the dollar went into a local neighborhood. By the time I found them, 29 cents on the dollar went into the local neighborhood, and everything was federal, state, and local, either bureaucracy or intermediaries and not-for-profits and contractors. And it was just, you know, everybody was feasting on it except the recipients. It was extraordinary.
That's the lesson from the public choice school of economics, that you know, government tends to be co-opted by well-organized special interest groups, and public, so-called public services that are provided for the public are actually co-opted and captured by special interest groups that use them for their own benefit at the expense of the average citizen.
So one of the things I've always believed is that if you could make government finances understandable and accessible to the citizenry who was paying taxes into those entities, that you could get a lot more accountability. And one of the reasons I love this report, I really encourage everybody to go to the Truth in Accounting website and download it. You can find it right on the homepage. Is this report makes it so easy. It's really well written and it's really accessible. And you go through why it's so important to have good financials and good financial reporting. And it's, you know, it's an easy read. You do it really well.
Thank you. It's not easy to make things easy in this neck of the woods, but that's what drove Sheila to develop this framework.
Uh-huh.
Her passion was helping citizens and enabling them to understand. And in order to do that, to do it on a consistent framework across the 50 states in a relatively simple way, that's what drove her to develop this report.
Well, if you look at this report and then sit down with any of your state legislators, you are in a position to have an intelligent conversation with them about, you know, what they're doing and why they're doing and why aren't we doing a better job. It was really, I have a dear friend who's very involved with the city council in California. And as soon as I read page 19, I sent it to him and I said, you better start yapping at people. This is not acceptable.
One way to use the report along those lines, I'm just thinking out loud, reacting to you, but you know, there's interesting stories about next door neighbors throughout the 50 states. Uh-huh. You know, Kentucky and Tennessee are like night and day. Kentucky's more or less kind of a disaster. And over there, here we are right next door. Why are two very close places so different? And you can learn lessons from each other about what to avoid or what to do. Conversely, right. Illinois and Indiana are like that too. Here we are with a long border, and Indiana has been responsibly and carefully run. Having said that, there are Republican places out there too that aren't necessarily,
right.
You know, historically Texas was thought to be the paragon of Republican and fiscal conservatism virtue, but I'm afraid things have been moving in another direction.
Well, I could tell you stories from HUD because they were the paragon of stealing the most money out of the federal coffers.
And the SNL crisis, oh my gosh. The Texas has some bad history for sure.
Well, the percentage of the losses at the RTC that were attributable to Texas and then their pals in Colorado, you know, when I first did the note, you know, we were losing massive amounts of money at the FHA fund when I first got there. And what I discovered is we were losing money. We were making a profit in 8 regions and losing money in 2 regions that was more than the profit we're making in 8. And of course, it was Texas and Colorado. You know, hello. Anyway, I want to talk a little bit, okay, about, so your report ends in with the 2019 financials, all except California, which has not produced theirs yet. And you mention that the results of the different sort of economic events of 2020 are going to produce very significant deficits. Now, I saw a report about a month ago from Kiplinger saying it was going to add, you know, $500 trillion to the expenses or less revenues. It was going to add $500 billion to the net deficit of the states. You had a number, I think, that was about $396 billion.
Yes, I made that number, by the way. That's a story all by itself. As soon as you start trying to get specific like that, you just got to step back. And that's why we developed an acronym for our guess of the shortfall from revenues. It was called, we call it a slug or a sleg, a sloppy, logically educated guess. It's a guess. Yep. And at the end of the day, when you try to do something like that, you realize, you know, what you're assuming about the future and what you know about the future and how uncertain it is. Another part of that equation is the fact that, you know, state and local governments, they think of the federal government as a source of revenue too, and the possibility of a bailout, that's not part of our $397 billion,
right.
But that's depending on which party is saying what, it's the uncertainty about federal government intervention right now is very high, leading to the current election environment, which is incredibly intense.
Well, it's funny, one of my favorite quotes is the German finance minister in 2018 at the G20 meeting in Beijing said, or in China said, you know, the debt growth model is over. There are no reforms that aren't real reforms, which means we can't borrow our way out of this. We have to cut. We have to change. And I think that's where we are. And so as I look at the 50 states, we're talking not just about the change of significant loss of revenues or sort of hits to expenses in 2020, but if you look at the extent to which small business has been wiped out and incomes have been destroyed, if you look at 21, 22, 23. So I just saw a chart that said 49% of the small businesses in San Francisco are expected to be closed or shut down or bankrupted in 2020. Now, you know, how does a municipality adjust when its accruals for pension funds and healthcare cannot get cut very much?
Well, I'm afraid that's part of the incentive and the motivation for many state and local governments, not all of them, to rely on Uncle Sam, which in turn can we trust, you know, can a lot of people think the federal government's authority to borrow and print money is a resource. And we're not at the day yet when they stop showing up to buy treasuries. But as they, you know,
we just saw an announcement that the deficit this year is now up to $3.1 trillion. I don't know if you saw
that
headline.
Yes, I did.
Yeah.
And possibly the real one is even bigger when you consider the unfunded Social Security and Medicare. That's another story. But, you know, one of the lines about bankruptcy is, how did you go bankrupt? Slowly and then suddenly.
Right.
And I'm afraid at the federal government level, I don't want to be a scared rabbit, but I'm afraid we should be careful of abusing that possibility.
Right. Well, we face the issue of what does bankruptcy look like at both the federal and state level. In one sense, the federal government can't go bankrupt because it can always print. You know, if I could print money off my computer in Catherine dollars, I can always pay my creditors because I just have to print money to pay them. But what that means is, you know, the dollars I print are not, at some point, if you go up that S-curve, are very worthless.
That's a form of bankruptcy. It's a form of default.
Right.
It's a, you know, I teach money and banking at Loyola, and I love to bring the students to the story of this old Jesuit monk, Juan de Mariana from the 1500s. This fellow wrote a rant against inflation at the time, using, you know, the way in which the king would debauch the currency by taking the gold content and silver content out. He wrote this rant against inflation, and that's what got him he also wrote an argument when it's ethically justified to kill the king, and his rant against inflation is the one that got him in more trouble than the argument for killing the king.
Well, let's face it, you know, Jesus got thrown out of Jesus got crucified because he threw the central bankers out of the temple, right? So I used to always tell
laughing,
everybody,
but this is serious stuff, Catherine.
Oh, yeah. That Jesus on the cross in the front of the church is basically a subliminal message to the kids saying, if you mess with our money, here's what we're going to do to you. But let's talk about what bankruptcy looks like at the state level. First of all, there's a serious question as to whether states would be allowed to go bankrupt. And so if they run out of money, what we're talking about is preserving tax revenues for the bondholders and slashing services to the bone, or raising taxes, or both, or literally confiscating property.
Well, the states then, they also have an incentive first, you know, the first things, push will come to shove first in trying to get money from the federal government in order to forestall this process. And then, you know, when we get to that push versus comes to shove, we're going to see, and we are seeing today, you see the migration trends pretty significantly directly correlated, as you were talking about, you know, as citizens, we should be looking at our governments. Well, the governments that are in bad shape are seeing exit. The lab rats are escaping from, and that's going to be a source of pressure and competitive pressure.
So I wanted to ask you about that because you, of course, are in Illinois. And John Titus always joins me on Money and Markets, or he's been joining me for the last couple months. And he just left and went to Indiana. He moved out of Chicago, which he loves. He loves Chicago. So, and of course, we have many subscribers who report leaving California and San Francisco. So to what extent are people migrating out of these states?
They're doing it either because of the prospect of higher taxes and what they see as government services. This is not just a higher income phenomenon. Lower income people that depend on government services have seen pressures on those services. And the property taxes for people in Chicago and the West Side, the South Side, and relative to the value of their property has made living in Chicago a less attractive proposition.
And property values have gotten hit pretty hard, haven't they?
They have, especially in the right. South Side and the West Side in Chicago. And it's the migration trends are real, and that's going to be, that'll help the day of reckoning come sooner than later.
So I'm going to tell everybody listening to this call, if you are thinking of moving to a location in the United States, this is a must-read report. Not just for you. If you know somebody, if you have a family member, a relative, a friend, a colleague who's moving, they have to do due diligence on their state and their local jurisdiction, because we are coming into a world where jurisdiction matters a lot. And I think that's why for anybody who's moving in the United States, this report is an incredible blessing, because it dramatically lowers the time it takes to do due diligence on a state.
Thank you very much, Catherine. That's what we try to provide, along with we have a companion website called Data Z. You can do charts based on all this data. Yeah. And that look up our Data Z website too. And that'll
It's great. And you put out a regular, I don't want to jump ahead to that, but let's just talk about, of course, one of my concerns is that when you strip services and you try and claw in more money for taxes, then you start with what I call the piratization.
Yeah, I thought that was a typo when you sent that to me. I thought you and I realized, no, that's what she really means.
Privatization is when the liabilities and assets transfer at market values. Piratization is what really happens in most cases when they decide to play this game.
Well, as the downward spiral begins and people can see it, the incentives are to be the first one to the lifeboat. And that's financially, that's can be described as what's happening, not just with bondholders, for instance, but with creditors like banks, as well as, you know, the pension funds and trying to cement your authority and seniority within the overall resolutions. Asked what bankruptcy looks like. Well, you tend to see a competitive process among various forms of creditors trying to get seniority in creative ways, which include, for instance, things like pension obligation bonds. One way to try to gamble for resurrection right now for some of these states and cities is to issue bonds and then put the money in the pension fund. Poof, you got a good pension fund, but guess what? That's a way to elevate the position of the people in the pension plan at the expense potentially of the taxpayers in the jurisdiction.
Right. Although I have to take, with interest rates this low, it's tempting. Interest rates are so low that it's tempting.
And maybe it's a little too tempting. There's no such thing as there's no such thing as a free lunch. Maybe maybe the rates are low for a reason.
Right. Absolutely. Okay. So anything else about take us through the next year with the incredible pressures coming from all the different things happening. What do you think is going to impact the average American vis-a-vis their state? What do you do you reside in Illinois?
I reside in the southwest suburbs of Chicago.
Okay. So what do you and your family do to protect yourself from this? What do you do? What should the person listening to this who lives in the United States do to protect themselves, you know, in terms of their state financial risk?
Well, I know what I think, but you talk about my family, they think something else. I'd like to move, but my wife and her family are all within a mile. And so my main point here is that we all have our own individual circumstances. I can't recommend any avenue for any one person depending on their own preferences. But I advocate, I think what citizens in general should have been doing 20 years ago, taking more active interest in the affairs of your local governments and their finances, being aware of the trends and educating yourself on those trends. And even to the extent you can, be an active participant and a force for good and financially in your environment.
Well, in the state and local area, you absolutely can. If you look at how much time we all spend on presidential elections, if we just took half of that and spent it on our state and local jurisdiction, what a difference it would make. What a difference it would make. It would be unbelievable.
I live next door to a great grade school. Let's put aside whether or not, that's one possible solution that Illinois mm-hmm. may have in the future, is privatizing education. But let's take, I have a great grade school right next door. I took a look at my grade school district's financial report. I might have been one of 0.0001% of the people in the district to do that. It was a little bit frightening, Catherine. They've been borrowing money, and the interest expense for an elementary school district ballooned in the last 10 years. In a period of declining interest rates, that it was they were spending more money than they took in and borrowing to make up the difference, and the degree of interest expense, I don't have the exact number in my head, but anyway, the main point is take an active interest in the local finances and in general, and that includes school districts, not just the city of Chicago.
Oh, absolutely.
Yep.
Well, one of the things, I know this certainly isn't your spin, but I'll just do this Larry spin for a second. People always say to me, what can I do politically about something that their state or local area is doing? And I said, dive into their finances. And they said, well, this isn't about finances. I said, yeah, but that's where you're going to get them. So what you need is political leverage. The way to get political leverage is to go through the finances and look at whether or not they're following the laws and the rules and managing the finances responsibly. And if you look at the political problems people have, usually those political problems show up where they're not managing things responsibly.
Yep, it's good to be aware of who's following the law or not. That just brings up another issue, though, regarding the tendency for states that are lawyered up to be in worse shape financially.
Right.
I'd encourage you to take a look at your local municipal code. I looked at the state of Illinois municipal code on the internet, mm-hmm. and I started scrolling down, and then I realized it was going to take about 10 to 15 minutes to get to the bottom of the page. It was the longest document I think I've ever seen in this job, which is another sign that the extent to which places that tend to be lawyered up, individual lawyers per se are not bad things.
Right.
They can be great things. But Mansur Olson, this great public choice school economics person, he did some great work looking at the role of lawyers in economic growth. And one of his main cautionary notes is, again, individual lawyers per se, they can be great things. But when you see lots of them, it's a sign of other forces that aren't necessarily good for you.
Right. So China has lots of engineers and we have lots of lawyers, and that's not necessarily a good thing. Okay. So let's talk about some of the reforms you recommend in the report. What is your recommendations that somebody can pick up when they're visiting or talking to their state or local representatives?
Well, two of our recommendations have been achieved in practice, the recognition of the pension liability baldly on the face and the OPEB liability, at least they're there. However, there is still work to do in the world of financial reporting. One thing that we're currently working on is the Governmental Accounting Standards Board is undergoing a financial reporting model initiative that would effectively cement the short-term views, effectively cash-based accounting, as a way to account for these governmental funds, which in turn the budgets of the state and local governments, they're not in the control of the Governmental Accounting Standards Board.
Right.
But encouraging your local government to consider budgeting, and don't think about borrowing proceeds as revenue, for instance, in the budgeting process.
Right.
Doing your best to inculcate an accrual accounting, not cash-based accounting framework that recognizes expenses, and try to make sure that those CAFRs are reliable in the statement of activities. That's the income statement. And we can give you, we can give a refresher if you want on how to look at these things. But the statement of activities does have a bottom line that's relatively reliable. and that's the all accrual revenue minus all accrual expenses, which leads to the change in net position. And try to enforce an environment in your state and local government that actually keeps that number neutral or positive, as opposed to kicking the can down the road by one of the solutions in the short run for the financially pressed places these days are going to be planning to spend less money on putting it into the pension plan. That's a way to reduce your quote expenditures, but that's one way to have your expenses on an accrual basis actually go up because you didn't. So that the accrual accounting stuff is very important. And I'd encourage people to learn about the differences between accrual and cash-based accounting as a way to interpret claims for instance, the city of Nashville claims to balance its budget every year, but they use the funds accounting, which they state represents the difference between all assets and liabilities. That's not true on an accrual accounting basis. And that's what helped, that's what helped Nashville get into their current situation.
Right. That's how people get into trouble. That's how I saw, if you looked at the FHA, that's how FHA and all the, you know, the insurance fraud got into serious, serious trouble.
Not recognizing losses when they happen. Anyway, it's
right. And we did a huge amount of reforms in the Bush administration to get the all the credit programs on an accrual basis. So when they decided to start playing games again, they just started lying about all the assumptions.
There's a parallel story from the savings and loan crisis. One of my favorite people out there is a guy named Ed Cain at Boston College. A professor. Uh-huh. He's the guy that coined the term zombie bank.
Right.
Ed decried the way in which the regulatory accounting principles that were crafted by the regulators and the big thrifts actually made insolvent thrifts look solvent when they weren't.
Right.
And that's
right.
And they had an incentive then to gamble for resurrection that incentive, I'm afraid, in our public pension plans that's why in the next few days we're actually developing a zombie index for Halloween to identify the states that are at the most risk of potentially gambling their way out of their pension problems with higher risk portfolios. I'm afraid the same types of incentives that we're facing today in Illinois are those that we didn't learn the lessons from in the SNL crisis back in the 1980s.
And I would also say, because we did a big report on pension funds in 2017, from what I saw, if you look at how they were trying to get yield, they were putting money with private equity firms who were doing things that were destroying their long-term economy. So you have these private equity firms juicing their yields by very destructive things which make money fast, but ultimately drive down the GNP of a place. And I think the bigger one is not in the pension game. I would say I spend more and more time, and this is what happened to me as an investment advisor, more and more time focused on how government policies are causing children to become not economically productive. So I did, when I was an investment advisor, I dealt with a lot of vaccine injury and some vaccine death, but also, you know, the poisoning in the food, the pesticides, the GMO foods, things that really caused children's health to deteriorate. So the current statistics are 54% of American children have chronic disease. We just had a wonderful pediatrician on the Salieri report who says, in fact, it's 70% because so many kids can't afford the testing to establish that they have chronic diseases. And Bobby Kennedy now says that their IQ points have fallen 7 points. Now, when you allow government policies and it's a combination of things, it's a cocktail, that produce an entire population who's that unable to compete globally. I mean, 7 IQ points up against you take 7 points off your IQ up against the Chinese and you're toast. So these are things that have a much longer term impact, but ultimately will come back around and hit everything from federal, state, and local finances to family wealth and on and on and on.
Well, our children are inheriting our earth now, and unfortunately, what we've bequeathed them federally and in many state and local jurisdictions maybe isn't what children had 50 years ago in some ways. I'm thinking about infrastructure now, just reacting to you. And one of the critical things that may or may not or should be in government, but it is the management of the water supply. And the infrastructure for water distribution is, you know, we learned in Flint, hopefully Flint isn't just an anomaly. Hopefully it's an anomaly, but a risk to the future. You know, given that the state and local governments that are in trouble, they may have difficulty funding infrastructure maintenance in the future that will be a risk to the health of the water supply and the children drinking it today.
Right. Well, the whole economy, including the private economy, dance on the platform created by all sorts of regulatory and facilities functions of the government. And if the government doesn't work optimally, ultimately it's going to come back and it's going to get all of us one way or another, including the big corporations. That's why I've been appalled at the extent to which they're happy to sort of disinvest in the governmental infrastructure and let it deteriorate to the extent that they have.
I've been depressed that the business community and the business leaders in Chicago allowed the finances to get where they were. You know, you would think that, you know, relatively sophisticated financial places like Connecticut, with the home of the insurance industry and or the accounting community, you know, that's another story. That why did the financial community in Chicago and Connecticut allow these jurisdictions to get to the position where they were in? They didn't, the civic leaders weren't leading in a way that would have been good for us.
Well, I was booted out of Washington and you were booted out of the Fed for being financially responsible. So you know why they didn't do it.
That's hopefully we can learn a lesson from not just you and I, but in general, the importance of respecting integrity and fighting corruption in government is we all have a shared interest in that in the United States.
Right. Well, if anybody in the economist profession has stood up, it's been you, Bill. So, so tell us what's next for Truth in Accounting, what you're up to for the next year, how we find you, how we find your work.
Sure. We're still plugging away. We're at www.truthinaccounting.org. That's our main website. I produce a daily newsletter called Morning Call, which has roughly 800, 900 people a day addicted to the distribution of, you know, I try to scour the world every morning for the best stories I can find, most intriguing ones anyway, about government financing.
Right. And I think you did a great conversation, didn't you? Or you covered the Mark Skidmore's reports.
Yes. The Defense Department.
Right. So he's got a new report. It's a doozy on the thrift savings plan. I don't know if you've seen it yet.
I haven't seen it. Nope.
Yeah. Right. I'll send it to you.
Google it. Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
It's a doozy.
We also have this website, you know, the Data Z website.
That it's great.
I recommend.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Yeah.
It's great. So give us your URL again.
www.truthinaccounting.org.
Okay. So there's a great place in this world for people of integrity in your proof, right?
I hope so. We're still, you know, integrity recognizes, I think integrity, an important component of that is humility.
Uh-huh.
And you know, the extent to which you can't necessarily recommend what's good for all, but, you know, to the extent that our government needs more of that, not less of it. And so thank you for that.
Okay. Okay. Well, Bill Bergman, thank you for joining me on the Salieri Report. Give the name of the state report again.
Financial State of the States, FSOS, or Financial State of the States, Truth in Accounting, Sheila Weinberg, our CEO. If you Google that stuff, you'll find this stuff pretty quickly.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay, thanks again. Have a great day.
Okay, you too, Catherine. Great to be with you again.
Bye.